Dear listeners, Sairam, we now bring you part 2 of our program, Vahini Satsang. Today's episode was first aired on the 9th March 2017 as part of Thursday Live programs on Asia Stream of Radio Sai. This program is hosted by Team Radio Sai's Bishu.
కర్మ అనునది, భక్తి అనునది, జ్ఞానం అనునది వేరువేరు అనుటకు నేను ఒప్పుకోను. వాటిని వేరువేరు చేయడం నాకిష్టం లేదు. కర్మ, భక్తి, జ్ఞాన సముచ్చయ వాదమును కూడా నేను అంగీకరింపను. కర్మయే భక్తి, భక్తియే జ్ఞానం. మైసూరుపాకు ముక్క మాధుర్యము, దాని ఆకారము, దాని బరువు మూడునూ వేరువేరెట్లగును. మనం నోటిలో వేసుకున్న వెంటనే దాని ఆకారం తినివేసినాము, దాని బరువును జీర్ణించుకున్నాము, అందులోని మాధుర్యమును రుచి చూసినాము. ఈ మూడు పనులు కలిసి ఒకసారే జరిగినవి కదా. ఒక క్షణమున ఆకారము, ఒక క్షణమున బరువుయు, మరొక క్షణమున మాధుర్యము లేదు. ఆ విధంగానే జీవుడు, ఆత్మ, పరమాత్మ వేరువేరు కాదు, కానేరదు.
ఐ డు నాట్ సబ్స్క్రైబ్ టు ద వ్యూ దట్ డివోషన్, action and wisdom are separate. I do not like it to be segregated. I will not even accept a collective argumentation about it. Action is devotion. Devotion is wisdom. A sweet like Mysore Pak has sweetness, size and weight. How can you isolate one from the other? Once we place it in our mouth, immediately we have consumed its shape, digested its weight, and tasted the sweetness therein. Do not all the three happen simultaneously? It does not happen that its shape, weight, and sweetness are experienced in separate moments. Similarly, the individual, the spirit, and the supreme spirit are not different. They cannot be so.
What is striking here to me is the emphasis, the force with which Swami is telling that you cannot separate one from the other. You know, Swami is reiterating again and again, I don't like it to be segregated. I don't subscribe to that view. I will not even accept an argumentation about it. Isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, just think of the Mysore Pak. Next time you get the prasadam in the mandir and suddenly you start
karma
thinking,
bhakti jnana melting in my mouth.
But this is very beautiful because if you look at the Gita, for example, Professor Venkatraman used to say, one fine day you are reading chapter 2, Sankhya Yoga, and you say, oh, jnana is ultimate. And then some other day you are going and you say, no, actually karma neva, action is the most important. Yes. Then you go to 12th chapter, mayeva manadasa, may buddhim nivesha, nivisishasi, mayeva ato urdvam. Yes. Think only about me, do only for me. Yes. I say, what more? Bhakti is ultimate. Then, so he said he used to get confused with that. And then, one day, Swami was giving an analogy in the discourse, I believe. He asked, in the traditional South Indian marriages, or in traditional, any of the Indian marriages at least, you have a variety of items which is served. And one would often wonder, why the hell are they making so much, so much food goes waste. You have salty items, spicy items, sweet, you have bitter, you have different, all the six tastes are all there. And Swami said, that's because it is not one customer who's coming. You are catering to a whole group of customers who are coming. And you have to feed them what they like. Somebody may like dal more. Somebody may like curry more. Somebody may like chapati more. They may like different tastes, so they will take more of that item.
Yes.
And if you say you don't have something in that taste, they will go back disappointed.
Mm.
So also the Bhagavad Gita is not catering to one target audience. It's targeting different target audience. So somebody who is actually in the path of action, or somebody who is in the path of devotion, they get their own answer.
Yes. In fact, in the marriages, I just reminded of nowadays, you know, you feel that, you know, sweet is what people generally like. And, you know, a hot item probably will be not so much liked. But nowadays, I think that given the number of diabetes people in any gathering, you have actually more people running for the non-sweet items than sweet items.
That is very sweet.
So, yes, tastes also change over time. Yes. God has to keep creating new things.
And no, see the love of Swami, no? I mean, really, who in the world can explain Atma Tattva through a Mysore Pak? I'm telling you, it's almost impossible.
Yes.
If we read the Upanishads, you know, we will come to know how complex it is.
In fact,
those people try to make it simple. You know, Papam, they made it more complicated for us. And, you know, I think this is a living example of Bhagwan. If you want to love somebody, don't confuse him more. Just try to give the simplest things, highest truths in the simplest ways.
In fact, I just reminded in another discourse, Swami is saying how Krishna communicated Atma Vidya to the Gopikas. Swami says that, you know, there was this clear blue sky and suddenly there was this clouds, yes, black clouds, and there was this thunder and lightning, and then Krishna used that opportunity to convey Atma Vidya to the Gopikas. And he says, see, that blue sky, that is what is divinity. And all those black clouds that cover the sky, that is tamoguna, that is ignorance.
Beautiful.
The thunder that came, that is rajoguna. And the lightning that came, that is sattoguna. And first, don't get confused, these black clouds, they'll go off.
Yes.
You know, with wind, the same wind which brought the black clouds, it will take away the black clouds too.
Yes.
So what will be left is only that clear blue sky, that is divinity.
Yes. I think Swami goes to the level, you know, what our mind is preoccupied with, he takes that and teaches us.
Uh-huh.
He knows that as students, no, we are more interested in the Mysore Pak that is going to come after the talk. So he says, okay, if you want that, okay, yes, through that I'm going to teach you this.
Yeah, wonderful. But I think, you know, but whenever I think about it, there cannot be a better example of, you know, how everything is just...
Especially that Krishna sweets Mysore Pak. I mean, it just melts in your tongue,
yeah,
on your tongue when you put that.
Absolutely.
Just imagining
pure
that
ghee.
Pure ghee, and the, he says the weight and the shape,
yes,
and the taste, all,
yes,
three change together.
Yes.
And there's another thing which Swami is saying, approaches, basically, when you are talking of bhakti, jnana or karma, there are different approaches to the same goal.
Yes.
And Swami is very vehemently saying that they are the same.
Hmm.
On another occasion, I think again it was Professor Venkatraman who asked Swami this question. He asked him, Swami, which is the superior path? Dvaitam, Vishishta Advaitam or Advaitam?
Hmm.
That is dualism or qualified non-dualism or Advaitam, that is non-dualism. And Swami looked at him and smiled. And, you know, common sense, and, you know, what we read Adi Shankara's different bhashyams, and he says the only antidote to ignorance is knowledge. And only through knowledge you can attain self-realization,
yeah,
because that is the ultimate, all that. Jnana, that is the ultimate step and all that. Swami's answer was totally out of the blue. Mm. He said, for the person following Dvaitam, that is the ultimate path. For the person following Vishishta Advaitam, that is the ultimate path.
Mm.
For the person following Advaitam, that is the ultimate path.
Correct. That's a whole funda.
You know, God. Once Bhimsen Joshi, the great Hindustani vocalist,
yes,
was asked, Panditji, which is the easiest raga to sing? Then you know what he told? That which I sing the best is the easiest to sing.
That's all.
Wow.
But I think the deeper point here is that we may be on any path. One problem that, you know, we often experience is that, you know, we become attached to the path on which we are. And therefore, this problem arises, you know.
Yes.
That a person who is on the path of Bhakti Marga will probably somewhere in the mind subconsciously that thought develops that only Bhakti is, you know.
Yes.
And if you go to a sannyasi, he will tell only jnana. Or if you go to a social worker, he will tell no, only the path of action is there. I think Swami is warning us, you know, against those tendencies. And I feel this also brings in an element of compassion in us, because as spiritual sadhakas, one of the greatest challenges that we face, you know, for example, suppose if I go every day for suprabhatam, I feel that going for suprabhatam is spirituality. And every person who doesn't go for suprabhatam is a non-spiritual person. You know, this is a real challenge which we see around us all the time, you know. If you go to mandir every day, then you will tell others, you know, you don't go to mandir, you are not devoted to Bhagavan. Whereas somebody will say, mandir, I am doing service in hostel, you know, you don't know that is devotion to Swami. See, this is a challenge I feel which Swami is warning us against, in the sense that, you know, Swami is just trying to tell us that you may follow the path which best suits you, but that doesn't mean that everybody else should follow the path that best suits you.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
That's the, I think that's an important thing that I kind of personally take away from this.
I'm just reminded of Peddareddy Garu.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Peddareddy Garu, I remember seeing him looking after Sai Geeta as a student. You know, Sai Geeta was opposite the senior boys' hostel. And to be very frank, I used to always think, what about this person here? He spent all his life just looking after an elephant, because he was not even coming for darshan.
Yes.
You know, for anyone, whenever they did any service, especially when you had Bhagwan in his physical form, the greatest reward or the greatest reason why you did any service was, you know, you will get one chance with Swami. That was there so much in everyone's mind. And here is someone who was like serving day in and day out and not even getting a darshan of Swami. And I used to feel, I mean, sometimes of course this was in my school days, but I used to feel, what a miserable life here. I mean, he spent all his life just looking after an elephant. He doesn't get any chance. That people who have done even 100th of the service that he's doing have got like so many photographs of Swami, and he's got nothing. Absolutely. And after, you know, sometime back when we are doing the story of Sai Geeta, I started interacting with him. And about 2 years ago, I started asking him about himself. You know, I asked him, don't you ever feel that, you know, I need to do something else, because now Sai Geeta also is not there. You know, now so many people who should not go outside, now they say, okay, let's for a break, let's go to Badrinath, let's go to Kedarnath, you know. Why don't you think you need to do something else? Don't you feel you have missed something in life? He says, missed? For the last 40 years, he has not moved beyond the senior boys' hostel, the Sai Geeta shed. On one side, on another side is a canteen. This was a triangle in which his whole life has been revolving. And he says, why I should go anywhere? I'll tell you something. Swami has given me the greatest blessing. I said, what is that? I don't know how, but I just don't have any desire.
Wow.
He said, no, no. I said, no, but don't you feel you have missed something? Like, so much you have missed, 40 years. Missed? He said, I don't know. What is it that you are saying missed? Because I am really feeling so full. He's saying that I just don't have any desire. I don't know. The only thing he does now, when he has time, when he's not serving in the South Indian canteen, is for the first time in his life, now he's opening, you know, Swami's life story. So this is Satyam Shum Sundaram. If I go to his room, no, he will tell, you know what? When Swami was a child, no, he went to the tree. And there he picked apple from the tamarind tree. Or now he's reading all that with great joy. Like a child, he will share those stories. Okay. But he says, I feel like I'm the most happiest person on earth. So I feel that is something, someone who spent all his life in Karma Marga.
Yes.
But bhakti was so, you're so steeped in doing that karma because of bhakti for Bhagwan.
Yes.
And he's reached that stage of, in some ways, that stage of jnana, where he says, I don't have any desire.
You know, this story, it just reminds me of that famous anecdote that that king comes on the banks of a river and he sees a person in loincloth. He's just lying there and looks, yes, gazing. And the king tells him, why are you wasting your time? Why don't you get up and do some work? And then he says, okay, if I work, what will happen? If you work, you will get a livelihood, you will get money. Then with the money, what you will do? Then with the money, you can buy so many luxuries. And with the luxuries, what I'll do? Then you can relax and enjoy your life. And then he tells the king, what do you think I'm doing now?
Yes.
So I think in a way,
yes.
There's another thought which just came to me, like karma, bhakti, jnana. It's also a question of integrity.
Yes.
And it's a question of, you know, Swami says, manas sekam vachas sekam karmanyekam. So if a person is following jnana marga, for example, can he cease to act?
Yeah.
You cannot say I am following the path of wisdom, so I will not act.
No, which means you are not truly following the jnana marga.
Yeah. So you cannot say I am not going to act. I mean, inaction is the biggest action.
Yes.
So even if you sit without doing action, that is an action.
Yes.
How can you say I will not act?
Yes.
And then intention itself is bhakti.
Yes.
Like if that intention is sanctified towards the self, that is jnana over.
Yes.
So there's a question of, and you know, that's why, as you were mentioning Suprabhatam and other things, it's like unity of thought, word and deed. When Swami says, and he says another thing very beautifully, he says there is no difference between spiritual and worldly life.
Correct. Yeah.
So it's like every action that you're doing, if you are in tune, that's what it is.
Correct. In fact, you're talking about Professor Venkatraman. I remember one occasion when Swami created a pen for Professor Venkatraman.
Mm.
And, you know, then later Swami asked him, what are you doing with it? And he said, Swami, I've kept it safely. But what are you doing with it? And Swami, only when some very important things, spiritual things, I'm using it to write. Swami said, chi, what is this? Why, how can you distinguish this is a spiritual thing, this is a non-spiritual thing?
In fact, our Bhagya sir's famous experience, I think you also have, you know, shown it, and again, and in this year's alumni drama also, they had depicted it where, yes, he goes to Swami and tells, yes, Swami, I want to go to the Himalayas, I want to do self-inquiry. And then Swami says, if you separate worldly life and spiritual life, in 1,000 births, I will not give you what you want.
Yes.
So he does the math, okay, he says, okay, if I live 70 years, then 1,000 is 7,000, my God, gone. 70,000. So I am not going to get what I, then he falls at Swami's feet, mm-hmm, you know, and then, so, see, I feel, you know, where else will you get such teachings, you know, except, yes, for the way Bhagavan has given us. It's so beautiful.
Absolutely. But it's just that whatever you path you follow, you got to do that
yes.
truly.
Correct.
Follow that sincerely. Only then the other things will happen.
I think very important word that CG brother has used is integrity.
Yes.
See, if you are committed yourself to the path of devotion,
yes,
based on your intuition or your you know, orientation, then it is very important to have a very high ideal in that, you know,
yes,
and then be very honest with ourselves,
yes,
and then keep on moving in that direction to the best of our ability.
Yes.
I think then eventually the knowledge that, okay, the jnana, bhakti, yes, karma, all eventually combined will come at some point in our lives.
Yes.
But that integrity, I think, which he, yes, said was extremely,
yeah,
critical.
Whichever path you may follow.
Yes.
I mean, this reminds me of Ramakrishna Paramahansa, you know, his devotion was so intense,
yes,
that he never saw Mother Kali as a statue. It was a living mother. And towards the end, when he has that problem with his throat, when he has the cancer, and that's when, and mother, and he says, Mother, I cannot eat. And mother says, well, how does it matter? You're eating through so many other mouths.
No, yes.
I think that is another, a very beautiful illustration, I feel, that, you know, how bhakti,
yes,
ultimately will lead to that stage of unity.
In fact, one experience that I have read about Ramakrishna Paramahansa is that, I think it was Swami Turyanand, when Ramakrishna Paramahansa was lying on the bed in his last days, suffering from throat cancer, and all his disciples are sitting around him, and he's looking very meek and tired. And so, I think Swami Turyanand was called Hari before he took sannyas, if I'm not wrong. So Hari comes in and he asks the master, Master, how are you? And the master tells him, Hari, I'm in lot of pain and I'm suffering. And then everybody around also kind of supports that, yeah, look at the master, he's suffering so much. And then Hari says, but you look so happy. And immediately Ramakrishna bursts out into a laughter and tells, this rascal has caught me. Oh, he's got me.
Yes, he's got me. Because everybody else believed him that he's suffering. But it was only Hari who knew that he knows that he's not the body. And actually he is always in bliss. How can he suffer? So this is again an example of Jnana and Bhakti, you know, come together.
Wow. Wonderful. Fantastic. So let's move on to the next paragraph.
ప్రతి కార్యము సేవామయము ప్రేమమయము జ్ఞానమయము కావలను. జీవితం యొక్క విభాగాలు అన్నింటిలోనూ కర్మ భక్తి జ్ఞానములు నిండి ఉండవలను. ఇట్టి వాణినే పురుషోత్తమ యోగము అందురు. ఈ భావాలు ఆచరణలోకి రావలను. నోటితో చెప్పిన ప్రయోజనం లేదు. శుద్ధమైన భక్తి జ్ఞానములతో హృదయము వికసింపచేసుకుని సాధన చేయవలను. నామామృత మాధుర్యములు జీవిత కళయు వేరు కాదు. నామము యొక్క ఆంతరిక ఘోషకును బాహ్య జీవిత కళకును సామరస్యమున్నది.
ఎవ్రీ యాక్టివిటీ మస్ట్ బి సఫ్యూజ్డ్ విత్ ద స్పిరిట్ ఆఫ్ సర్వీస్ లవ్ అండ్ విజ్డమ్. ఎవ్రీ ఆస్పెక్ట్ ఆఫ్ మ్యాన్స్ లైఫ్ షుడ్ బి సాచురేటెడ్ విత్ యాక్షన్ డివోషన్ అండ్ విజ్డమ్. దిస్ ఇస్ వెరీలీ కాల్డ్ the Purushottama Yoga. These feelings have to be put into practice. Merely speaking about them is of no use. After one's heart blossoms with pure love and wisdom, one should engage in spiritual practices. The nectar of the divine name and the art of living are not different. There is a concordance between the name of the Lord resonating inside and the art of living outside.
I think there are so many powerful statements here, isn't it? I mean, you have Bhagavan saying that after he mentions about how every activity should be suffused with spirit of love, wisdom and service, he makes that statement that after one's heart blossoms with pure love and wisdom, one should engage in spiritual practices. And you know, it comes back to what we were discussing before we started this session. I mean, in the beginning of this, before we started chapter 5, where there is no point in trying to do something to reach somewhere. And I think that's what Bhagavan is here hinting at. After one's heart blossoms with pure love and wisdom, one should engage in spiritual practices. So what are your insights on this, Aman?
No, I think this is extremely powerful because, again, you know, our understanding starts with this. Let me do fasting so that I can develop love for Swami. Let me do Japa Yoga so that my heart blossoms, so that I get wisdom. Let me focus on Tattvamasi. Swami is making the whole equation totally turn around, you know. And he's saying that spiritual practices have to be done after the heart blossoms and not the other way. Spiritual practices are not meant for the heart to blossom, yes. But the heart has to blossom first and then spiritual practice has to be undertaken. See, one thing that I resonates with me in this statement, of course, as we discussed that this has to be approached from a deeper dimension of exploring oneself first, and then from that emerges everything that we do. Two perspectives to this I can probably share. So the first thing is that the purpose of sadhana is to dissolve the ego at some level. The purpose of sadhana is to dissolve this body consciousness. But unless most of the times or many times what happens is spiritual sadhana strengthens that ego. And you know, that is why we have to go back to Dharma Vahini, where Swami says that any act that is done with body consciousness is adharma. This may be an extreme statement, it may be a very powerful statement for us to digest. But even at the surface level, what it means that even if you are doing sadhana as a personality, I am a personality, Aman Jhaveri, or I am CG Sai Prakash, and this personality is doing this sadhana to achieve XYZ goals, then all you are doing is you are only strengthening your ego, your body consciousness.
Identification with the body.
So I think the precursor to that is, and I think that's what Swami indicates, that you know, once you look, turn inwards, then you explore a dimension deeper than your mind. And then the actions that follow naturally will be aligned to the spiritual objective of our life. That is one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is, once your heart blossoms, then there is nothing like spiritual activity. Then everything becomes a spiritual activity.
Yes.
The reason being that, I interpret this blossoming of the heart as blossoming of one's awareness, or, you know, being aware of awareness. See, we are aware all the time, but we are not aware of our awareness. We are aware of the thoughts that happen to us. The moment we start becoming of the aware of the awareness that we are, then there is a certain element of consciousness that gets translated into all the actions that we do.
Yes.
In Buddhism, there is a famous meditation called dishwashing meditation, right? Which is, you wash dishes and you meditate. It is not the dishes that have some power, you know, which is going to give you some great power within you, but the level of awareness with which you do things is actually what differentiates maybe a spiritual activity from a non-spiritual. Spiritual activity may be something which you are doing consciously. For example, mantra japa. What is mantra japa? You are consciously aware of the sound that emerges from your mind. Instead of being aware of the sound, you are aware of the hands that are washing the dish or the teacup that you are, the tea that you are drinking, right? So I feel another way to look at it is like this. Once the heart blossoms, then every activity can be translated into a spiritual activity. Even if you are traveling in a bus, traveling in a train, waiting in the line, that moment itself can become a spiritual activity by just becoming aware of yourself. Because ultimately, that is what is Swami, that dimension of Swami within us is yes. That our own existence.
Yes. In fact, to put both the perspectives together, ultimately, what Swami is telling in Dharma Vahini also is that you are supposed to be guided only by the Atma.
Yes.
That is what is the Atma Dharma.
Correct.
And so if you are doing anything that is dictated or that is a trait of the Atma, then you are okay.
Yes.
So here also, if you know that you are the Atma, then you are, you know, you are in that awareness.
Yes.
Then whatever you do,
yes,
will have the right way to go forward.
Correct.
You know,
correct.
You are in the right direction.
That's true. Only problem is that, you know, many times when we use the words like Atma or Brahman, difficult, or Self, they are very big words.
Very big words.
You know, and then the human mind, the society in which we live, no?
Yes.
It creates social constructs.
Yes.
So Atman is also a construct.
Yes.
For somebody who is a Charvaka, for him Atman may be something else.
Yes.
For somebody else, it may be a word used by RSS. For somebody, it may be addressing your own self.
Exactly.
But that's why I feel that in the spirit of introspection, no, even if we use simple words like awareness of our own existence,
yes,
or awareness of our own aliveness, see, yes, we are alive.
Yes.
But how many times do we experience our aliveness?
Yes.
See, how many times in a day do we actually just sit back and say, okay, let me experience my own aliveness, my heart beating,
yes,
or blood flowing in my sensations in my body, right?
Yes.
I have personally felt that even doing that, you know, not even going to the level of I am the self who is all, yes, pervasive, which is true,
yes,
and which is where we all have to reach, even not doing even that, but even looking, just closing our eyes or even with eyes open, just experiencing our own beingness, aliveness, no? That itself brings an element of, you know, immense joy and peace. It may be short-lived,
yes,
but it still exists. So yes, even from that perspective, if we start moving, no,
yes,
we can make good progress.
And what also occurs to me is, you know, as you mentioned, Atma is a very heavy word for people to fathom, digest,
yes,
live it in real life. But I think that is the reason why ultimately Swami brought the discourse to love.
True.
Because I think that is something, okay, to whichever level you can understand,
yes,
that is something that everyone can relate to. Because ultimately, if you see, it is all about compassion. Because Swami, we have brought it down to compassion.
Yes. Yes.
And I think that is something that everyone can relate to.
True.
I think, and if slowly you start practicing compassion, as you do it more and more,
yes,
then you will increase your level,
yes,
of understanding, yes, of compassion.
It's true. That's true.
And I think that is one practical, yes, way of
in fact, one more thing which is very true is, the more we go within ourselves, the more compassion we'll be able to manifest outside.
Absolutely.
We don't have to kind of, you know, really look out for dogs on the street to feed them and believe in ourselves that, oh, now I'm following compassion, which,
yes,
which is also what we see many times.
Yes.
But let me give you an example. So recently there was, again in the field of neurosciences, there was research done on Buddhist monks who have meditated for more than 10,000 hours in their entire life. And they compared the brain structures of these monks with people who have never meditated in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And what they found out was that a monk's ability to manifest compassion was far, far higher than a layman's ability to manifest compassion.
Mm.
Similarly, your responses to fear, anxiety, pain are much, much more minimalized in a monk as compared to a non-meditator. This doesn't mean that only meditators will follow or achieve the goal, because that's what we are discussing. But the point is this, by meditation, what they have taken as mindfulness, which is something, yes, that word that is being popularly used nowadays.
Yes.
But I think mindfulness is just one way, you know, turning inwards and rooting yourself, rooting your mind, not in the world, in the objects of the world, which are constantly changing, but rooting your mind in a deeper truth,
yes,
will also make that change. So the more we root ourselves in a deeper truth, and which is the deepest truth, according to Swami, it is our own self.
Yes.
So the more we root our minds in those, no, the qualities of compassion, empathy, love, yes, will naturally manifest. I don't think we may have to bring in a lot of effort to,
yes,
to yes, achieve those, or, you know, to see those happening in our, yes, life.
And I think a simpler way is, you know, just going by what Swami said, you know, you are God, you are God,
yes,
you are God. If you just keep telling yourself,
yes,
the other person also is God, the other person also is God, then automatically, you know, only godly traits will,
yes,
demonstrate from you, you know, will exude from you. In fact, there is there's a interesting group called Love at Work. Sometime back, I had the chance to meet one of them. They're a group which started in Australia, and now it's an international group. So their whole idea, to put it in a nutshell, is how to basically translate this love into real life situations. And so they have these exercises where each person tries to imagine Swami in the other person, in your professional space, in your social space, in your personal space, and they share their experiences. And the transformations that have happened, yes, in them, in the surroundings, in the situation.
Yes.
And they compile them also sometimes. And wonderful. It's really amazing stuff,
yes,
that comes out. In fact, they released their new bulletin just today, this morning. And I happened to see that. And just to share one example, you know, so now they are thinking, okay, now there is so much of technology around us. How do we harness the power of technology? You know, we got to live with technology, but how do we use this to divinize our day-to-day activities? So there is this software developer, you know, he says, you know, I do a lot of coding. And so as I am coding, you know, he thought of, I have to do Namasmarana in some way. So in the code, you know, he tried to encrypt Sai Ram. So what he does is, he makes it an alphanumeric script for Sai Ram. So where A stands for 1 and S stands for 19 and, you know, I stands for 18, for 9. So Sai Ram for him is 19, 1, 9, 18, 1, 13. So that
beautiful.
That is Sai Ram for him. So he says, I insert this code in the comment section of all my code, you know, in the scripts that I write. And for, you know, for my peers, it is some number which the coder has put for his reference, so they don't bother about it. So, and nobody deletes it, but I know that is my Namasmarana. So similarly, there's another person who says that, you know, whenever he finishes a little bit of code, he puts a heart symbol there. Okay, just to remind him, okay, I've offered it to God. You know, this is an offering to the God. So after she finishes everything, then before he sends it to the boss, then she removes all the heart symbols. But everywhere she's put a heart symbol, it's constantly to remind that, okay, this much is for God, this much is for God, this much is for God.
In fact, one of the organizations that I went for my PhD, you know, I was very surprised. In fact, you know, just so that the readers, the viewers also know, it's not only that today we are talking about love and all these things. I am experiencing it myself that in the corporate world also, a lot of people are talking about these values,
yes,
and how they can be translated. And to one of the organizations where I went, they were undergoing an exercise called empathy building, mm-hmm, where what they do is, the moment you enter the organization, you have to pick up a card and on that card there is a random person's name in the organization. You may or may not know that person, and you are supposed to go and talk to that person for 5 minutes and inquire about that person's well-being.
Wow.
And luckily when I was there, they have this fortnightly meetings where everybody comes together to share their experiences. And I was able to witness some of the experiences that these people had. They didn't have any typical spiritual orientation or anything. But you know, when they came on stage and then they said that, you know, we didn't know this person. We went and spoke to that person. And more than that person being feeling happy, we were the ones who experienced happiness.
Wow.
We were the ones who experienced well-being. And they are now institutionalizing this process.
Wow.
So yes, it's true that it's possible to practice these things, and even yes, corporate organizations are doing it nowadays. Yes,
absolutely. I mean, definitely, anything that you do, even though your goal is not spiritual, but if you do anything towards that direction, worldly success will automatically happen.
Correct.
It's just a shadow, as Swami says. As you climb the coconut tree and the shadow, you're automatically climbing, yes, the shadow also.
Yes. I think that is also the theme of the next paragraph.
Oh, is it? So, I think we'll have to keep that for the next session. Let's pray to Swami that, you know, he guides us to understand further these beautiful ideas that he has so painstakingly written almost 40, 50 years ago, and he gives us the strength to not only understand but also practice whatever we have understood and experience the joy of living a life where Prema Vahini becomes the way of your life and living. Thank you so much, Aman, for joining us, and we hope
Thank you so much for having me here. It's a pleasure, and it's a great opportunity that Swami has given, and my immense gratitude to Bhagwan and your entire team. Thank you so much.
We hope that you can join us also for future sessions. So, dear listeners, so that brings us to the end of Vahini Satsang. As always, please feel free to share your feedback. You can write to listener@radiosai.org, and if you are reading the Prema Vahini, please do share your thoughts. If you have any questions on this chapter 5, we could take that up in the next session. Please feel free to experiment with what we are discussing. We are doing that ourselves, but it would be very nice to listen from you about your experiments with Prema, your experiments with this stream of beautiful life that Bhagwan has given all of us. Thank you so much for being with us. Sai Ram.
You just heard part 2 of our program Vahini Satsang. This episode was first aired on the 9th March 2017 as part of Thursday Live from Prashantinilayam on Asia stream of Radio Sai Global Harmony. This program was hosted by Team Radio Sai's Bishu. Thank you and Sai Ram.